Welcome, everyone, to this week's W3C CCG meeting. So today we have Gabe Cohen from TBD to actually talk about DIB DHT. There was a very interesting conversation thread about a month ago, and I think some people actually came in and said, hey, can we bring Gabe on to have this discussion? And very excited to have him here, and thanks him again for taking the time to actually drop by and talk about DIB DHT. Now, before we start, I just want to go over the Code of Ethics and Professional Conduct reminder. I just want to make sure that we have a friendly and productive, respectful conversation. I think we've been doing that for years, but still doesn't hurt to have that quick reminder at the beginning of every meeting. Next, a quick intellectual property note. Anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributions to any CCG work items must be member of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. So if you have any questions in regards to the W3C account or the W3C community contributor license agreement, please just ping any of the co-chairs here, whether it's Kimberly, Will, or myself. All right, a quick quote note. These meetings are being automatically recorded and transcribed, and we try to publish it in the next few days. I think we have been quite timely recently, but if you have encountered any issues with that, feel free to ping us as well. We use GT Chat to queue speakers during the call. You can type in Q plus to add yourself to the queue, or Q minus to remove. And you can type in Q question mark to see who is in the queue. All right. As customary, just want to give a quick moment for introductions and reintroductions. If you're new to the community or you haven't been engaged in the community and wants to reintroduce yourself, please just feel free to unmute. Actually, I see a lot of new faces, but I won't call them names.
Hey, I'm happy.
Please, Frank.
Hey, yeah, I've been on meetings before, but it's been a while. Frank Hennig from the TBD team, part of Block.
Welcome, Frank.
Thanks.
Hi, I'm Brady Saraf. Also have been to meetings in the past, but it's been a while. I am the founder of Ed3DAO. We're a community of educators looking at blockchain and other credentialing technologies to move education forward.
Great. Welcome. Anyone else?
Hi, this is Gerald Glickman. First time attending a meeting here. Thank you all. I work in fraud and identity risk management at MVP Bank.
Welcome, Gerald. Anyone else want to introduce or reintroduce themselves?
Hi, Pierre-Antoine Champin from W3C. I'm team contact of the DID working group, but not so much attending this CG on a regular basis. But yeah, I've been here a few times before, and I'm looking forward to today's presentation. Thanks.
Welcome, and no problem. Even if you can join us once in a while, we will always welcome you. Anyone else? All right. Announcements and reminders. Are there any news that or announcements that people want to share? If so, feel free to just unmute or type in Q plus. All right. Any updates or questions on the work items? All right, last calls for introductions, reintroductions, announcements, or work item related topics. All right. So let's get to the main agenda. So today, again, very glad to have Gabe here to talk about DID, DHT, which stands for Decentralized Identifiers Distributed Hash Table. Actually, most recently, we have more topics on selected disclosures and cryptography. So I think having a session on the decentralized identifiers is actually a good call. And very glad to see all these new faces here. So thank you, Gabe, for giving us the opportunity to draw new members and new audiences. But without further ado, Gabe, the floor is yours. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Harrison, for inviting me. And hello, everyone. Brief intro. My name is Gabe Cohen. I'm a head of or director of open standards at TBD and focused on taking things from the standards world to implementations. And I've been in this space for a number of years now, maybe just over 5 years. And TBD, for those who don't know, I'll drop some links, is a business unit inside Block, similar to how Google became Alphabet, Block became Square, Square became Block. And there are a number of business units under it. You might have heard of Square or Cash App, their title. And we're a new one called TBD that's focused on decentralized financial products, making the decentralized financial world accessible for everyone. And in this project, we make heavy use of DIDs and verifiable credentials and decentralized data storage. So we are looking for a few DID methods that make sense for our usages. And historically, I can go into what we've used. I'll share my screen in a second. But we've recently come to think that DID DHT is what we like and are going to use from now on. So I'll go into a bit more detail. But please put your questions in the chat. I'm interested to hear any and all feedback. Let me share my screen. I also want to note that there are a number of folks from TBD here. Please feel free to interject if you think I've missed an important detail. All right. So I won't tell you what DID methods are. I'm going to assume that most people know what they are. So at the start of TBD, we supported a number of methods. Our primary method was ION, which is a Sidetree-based DID method from the Decentralized Identity Foundation. We also support DID Web and DID JWK. They all have their sets of trade-offs, but we liked ION the most because it was the most robust feature-wise. It was permissionless. You didn't really have to trust anyone. It had strong ordering, so you could rotate and store keys of many different types and sizes, and you could have different properties. It did have some downsides. The UX was kind of tough. There's this concept of long-form identifiers and short-form identifiers, and you had to wait for a Bitcoin transaction to make it to the blockchain to have certainty in your DID state. And waiting 10 minutes wasn't a great UX for some of the real-time use cases we're looking at. Also, it's pretty complex architecturally to deploy and maintain, and there weren't that many nodes out there. So in theory, decentralized, what I like to call decentralizable, but in practice, not that decentralized if one or two people are really the only ones supporting the network. So we're trying to think of a method that could actually be decentralized and meet our business use cases. DID Web, of course, is useful and interesting, but not decentralized because it relies on traditional web infrastructure. And methods like DID Key or DID JWK are useful for some use cases, but not that robust in functionality in that you can't rotate keys or add additional properties like service endpoints. So we're less interested in that. And looking at the DID methods that were out there, we couldn't really find any that gave us the guarantees we wanted without buying into a blockchain or certain ledger technology that we saw as not a great business decision. So there our research started. So DID DHT came up with after a number of months of research last year. Stands for Decentralized Hash Table. More specifically, a DHT, for those who are unaware, you could think of it as a map of keys to values that is distributed. So it doesn't just live in one server or one network. It lives across a number of servers and networks You might be familiar with IPFS. IPFS has a DHT. There are others as well. And we're using a DHT that has a very good track record. More specifically, it's the BitTorrent DHT. You might think BitTorrent, oh, piracy. And you'd be right. But something interesting about BitTorrent is that it's been around for over 20 years, makes up a ton of internet traffic, and is actually widely adopted by many Fortune 500 companies like Google, Facebook, Ubuntu. Many other companies use it for distributing software and updates. Microsoft does this, for example. So there are less controversial uses of it. It's a neutral network, and it has a really good track record. The DHT for BitTorrent is called Mainline, and it's been around for about 15 of these 22 years and has millions of nodes, over 15 million on average every day. It varies. And yeah, my research, over 1,000 organizations using it. So we felt really confident with this track record, and we're wondering if we could leverage it to distribute DIDs. And the network is already decentralized, which is really attractive to us because we don't have to bootstrap a new network and there's no blockchain involved. We don't have to sell anyone a coin. So what is DID DHT? It is built on an open source community project called Picar. I will drop the link in the chat in a second. And Picar's goal is to create a thin network overlay between the domain name system and peer-to-peer overlay networks. So the real goal is to reimagine what a DNS server could look like and ask, what would a DNS server be?
Legendary requirements?
Bill, you're unmuted. Thanks. So PCAR stands for Public Key Addressable Resource Records, and the goal here is to create a linkage between the DNS system and verifiable records using the BitTorrent DHT. And we thought this was a pretty interesting project because all the records are signed and independently verifiable. There are some restrictions, namely you have to have records under 1,000 bytes, and you have to do republishing. The records aren't guaranteed to stay around forever. On average, we found in testing they could stay up for up to a day or so, but the only strong guarantees are a couple hours. So with these constraints, we wondered if it would work, but so far it's proven to be pretty good, and we've put in a number of interesting specific considerations in our design to account and work around these. So most notably, it has all features you need from a DID. You could, as long as you're within that 1,000 byte limit, you could add any property you want to a DID document. You could have different key types. You can have different services. There are some built-in anti-spam measures. Daniel came up with a neat idea to do an anti-spam mechanism called a retention proof, which essentially means that you calculate a hash, and depending on the amount of work you put into this hash, it's a signal to the node you submit it to retain it for longer. It's an optional feature. Similarly, there's an optional discovery mechanism via Bitcoin and some other mechanisms we're exploring. So we wanted to never require you use Bitcoin or any ledger, but we wanted to make it an optional mechanism that you could discover nodes that are going to retain and republish your data. It's worth noting that you could use any of the 15 million nodes that are out there today. You would have to handle the republishing yourself. So we make a distinction between Picar nodes, our nodes, and the BitTorrent nodes. And our nodes are kind of a added layer with a bunch of nice utilities and guarantees and APIs that manage your DID, republish it for you, and help you discover the network. Interestingly, Daniel had a neat idea to upgrade in place DID key and DID JWK methods. We think this could be really promising in the sense that you treat both methods as they are today. If they have an ED25519 key, which is required by BitTorrent DHT. So assuming that they did, your did JWK or did key have an ED25519 key, you could resolve and use the DIDs as they are today, but do an optional resolution step to check the DHT for more information. And the records are all signed, so you're always going to be able to trust that it came from the controller of those keys. And so far, we've talked to the spec authors for both methods, key and JWK, and they're amenable to accepting an extension for an optional resolution step to the DHT. So it's kind of giving these DID methods superpowers. So I mentioned the 1,000-byte maximum payload size. One thing we had to do to go around this was define a mapping to compressed format. And because Picard uses or aims to be a replacement for DNS servers, they use DNS resource records. So we had to define a mapping of DID documents to DNS resource records. Hopefully this could be an independent spec. If anyone in the group is interested in that, please let me know. So far it's a part of our spec, but we're thinking a mapping of DIDs to DNS records could be more broadly useful. So there's this translation that happens between a DID document, a DNS record, and then it's transformed to a packet that's encoded and compressed and then sent to a DHT server where it is independently verifiable. And we've been running a free gateway today to show how committed we are. We went and implemented the spec in a number of different languages and have been running a free server for the past few months without failure and have a few thousand DIDs already. So our main goal over the next few months is to harden our implementation. We've been accepting a lot of feedback onto the spec itself, which would be great to have the group's feedback on. I'll put a link in the chat for that. And we hope to move it to a different organization. Right now it's just under the TBD name, but we hope to put it in the ITF, W3C, maybe DIF, or somewhere else. We're open wherever folks are interested. And we aim to fully transition to DHT for our default DID method at TBD, which is pretty much true as of today. There is one last thing, but before I get to it, anyone from TBD or on the call have anything to add that I missed, Daniel or anyone else?
Did you go through the did JWT and key? What do you call it?
I did.
You did. Did. Okay. Yeah. Were people just really excited? Was the reception warm?
I have not heard a reception yet.
Okay, we'll ask them.
Okay, so the one more thing, there is a DID working group that's being recharted currently, and one of the thoughts or asks was to have DID methods that rise to a higher level of standardization or formalization that prove out interoperability. And in the past, DIDs have gotten a lot of flack for many reasons. But the two that stand out to me are that they use the blockchain or are bad for the environment or weren't actually decentralized or fully featured according to the DID core spec. And we think this DID method, while it does have some limitations, is pretty damn good in that it is truly decentralized, can be fully featured, and could have pretty broad adoption in existing and the new method. So we're hoping that this could be a DID method that creates a path towards adoption in browsers or industry-wide adoption. Daniel, go ahead.
Yeah, I think the thing to underscore here is, you know, everyone, you know, how this all started years and years ago. Everyone had their own DID method. They all had their own fun blockchain. There was all tokens everywhere. I mean, of course, there was this like incentive to, push your own thing, right? Let's be honest. And I think the one cool thing about this is there's two things to be mindful of. One, There are a lot of companies in W3C that do not like anything attached to a blockchain. While some other people, like even myself, like Bitcoin, I believe in Bitcoin, they may not receive that the same, right? And we want this to be a viable thing. I think the one point that really underscores why this could be a method that bypasses both the blockchain, you know, dislike plus let's do our own thing is that it really, it's using mainline DHT for BitTorrent's network, which has just been around for so long. And it's sort of just this thing that everyone's come to accept, even large companies like those. And so that's why I think it's got the best shot. Not because it's like, is it the best method we could ever construct? Does it have every single crazy feature you could ever imagine? No, but it has most of them and it doesn't have any really contested points. I think that's the biggest thing, right? It's even compatible with other small DID methods, you know, like more contained DID methods like DIDJBK and Key. And I think those things together kind of are a little bit of magic that we might be able to work if people are, you know, want to jump on board.
Yeah, thanks, Daniel. One thing to note is we're pretty reflective of the shortcomings and opportunities that we saw, and I would encourage you to read through the spec, both implementation considerations and security and privacy considerations, where we go over all the different possible attack vectors and our current mitigations or thinking around mitigations. That is all I had prepared. I would love to take questions and comments. If it's possible, Harrison. But thank you.
Yep. If anyone has questions, please type in Q+ into the chat. I got one question. So earlier you talked about like for the mainline Bitcoin BitTorrent's mainline, like you have to republish it like every few hours or so. So can you clarify how do you actually address the persistence of the identifier if you have to keep republishing it to the mainline?
Yeah, that's a good question. So there's this fun diagram at the top that shows how we think of the system. At the bottom, everything's built on mainline. It's what provides the guarantees. Then there's this open source project called Picar, which we're leveraging. And then there's DIDDHT. And each of them have their own server. So you could use a standard mainline DHT node. You could use a Picar node. Or you could use a DIDDHT node. And each of them provide you different guarantees. So we're actually building our own server that handles your publishing for you. So you could not trust us. That's fine. You could go directly to mainline DHT or a Picar node and handle publishing yourself. But if you submit it to our node, we'll handle republishing on your behalf, along with offering you some nice things around discovery or indexing.
Yeah, and that's to underscore that, you know, while mainline forgets, you know, things at a faster rate, that's why you do this 2-hour republishing and we handle that for you, DIDDHT nodes will be indexable by certain registries, so that you can go to those nodes and they'll, you know, sort of the guarantee they provide is not just that they're going to republish, but they'll keep them for longer based on you doing some work, you know, some other little mechanics that are involved. And so you can go to them and you could like, you know, ask for just DIDs and they're very specially interested in DIDs, right? They're like, we're not just interested in any mainline record, just anything. We're interested in DID-based mainline records. So they keep them, you know, longer if you specify that. And that's a good place to go to query if you want some like features on top of what mainline would give you in terms of fetching.
Thanks. Any questions for anyone?
I'm curious, anyone who is implementing or using DIDs in their stack, would you be interested in using DIDDHT, or if not, what would hold you back?
I don't see any comments here, but quick question, like, can you kind of give us, I guess for the potential implementers, like, can you kind of give us a quick rundown of the pros and cons of you know, Git DHT compared to other more common? Well, earlier you already talked about Git DHT versus Ion, but can you like actually provide pros and cons of other methods? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it would be easier if there was a specific method to go through, but generally, independent verifiability is its shining feature. You don't have to trust R nodes or a DHT node. All records are signed by the key used in the document, which we're calling an identity key, and it's at 825519 key. So you don't have to trust us or anyone. All records are independently verifiable. You could have multiple different properties, multiple different key types, and we have a small registry where you can add extensions should you wish to. So others are able to encode and decode your DID method, DID documents. I would also say it's actually decentralized. It propagates to one of these 15 million nodes almost instantly. And we've done tests where I'm in California and my colleagues in Australia, and they could resolve it within a few seconds. So almost instantly you have really strong decentralization and resolution guarantees. Another thing that we didn't like about some existing DID methods is they didn't provide historical resolution, which means after you change your DID state, you're not able to see prior states, which could be really risky. Like if you rotate off a key and use a lot of you've signed a lot of data with that key, you rotate it off, there's now no way for anyone to verify the data that you signed. So we see like historical resolution as a really key feature. And using our gateway nodes, we are able to order events with a sequence number provided by the DHT and provide historical resolution of DID documents. Those are some of the features, but I'm happy to go into more.
Thank you. Brandy, you're on the queue.
Yeah, Gabe. So I'll speak up and answer your question. Yes, we would be interested in using DID DHT, although I'm not the technical person. I'm on the business side, so definitely not the decision maker on that. But what I like about it is that it's truly decentralized. What I don't like about it is the time limitation, that it's not perpetual, but the historical resolution that you just explained would definitely help with that.
Thanks. Yeah, we're hopeful that most people end up using gateways, whether it's ours or their own, and we've made all of our code open source to that end. So we really want to encourage people to be able to run their own gateways and handle their own republishing should they want to, and there's no need to rely on us or another server. And I just put a link in the chat to that.
Something to be mindful of is that because all you need to do in rebroadcasting these events to mainline DHT is to have UDP ability. So while browsers can't do it, extensions can, native apps can on every platform access UDP. So all you really need to do to be completely self-publishing to that network is have your device, you know, an app on your device, like a DID wallet app or BC app or something that understands DIDs, wake up at intervals, right? Maybe every hour, maybe every 2 hours, whatever it is. And those are typically allowed, right? Just doing a single UDP push out is something that you can actually do in a lot of native platforms just on a cron task. And so that allows you to have no, you know, you don't have to trust anyone, right? You can just have your device. And if some device of yours is on, even if you didn't republish with a gateway and didn't do the things that do perpetually keep it going, you yourself with just your own devices could pretty easily make sure that it's always resolvable.
I got a follow-up business question. So what's the cost involved for DID DHT? Because earlier in your slide, I see the word free, but in most of the DID methods, like, you have to pay some kind of fee, right? Maybe not in US dollars, but in some kind of cryptocurrency. to actually anchor it I'm talking about distributed ledger based DIDs. You have to pay some kind of fees to anchor it on top of those ledgers. So like, what are the costs involved? Is it truly free?
Yeah, the only real cost is running a server. There's another cost, which I talked briefly about earlier, around a retention proof, and that's our anti-spam measure. So certainly someone could spend a million registration or query requests to our server, and that wouldn't be great. To reduce this, we have a feature called a retention proof, which is similar to the hashing process used by Bitcoin called proof of work. We don't require Bitcoin. We don't require this retention proof. It's an optional feature that nodes could employ as an anti-spam measure. So if you want your DID retained, you're going to do this hash. And the more hashing you've done, it's a stronger signal to the node to retain your DID for longer. So nodes that are experiencing spam could enable this feature or want to prevent it in the first place. They could enable this feature, require that people submitting new DID operations hash a bit, and that will give you guarantees around how long your DID is retained.
Yeah, effectively the two costs are the biggest cost on running one of these nodes. There's storage. Actually, the biggest one is I/O, right? Doing those UDP pushes is a cost, and you can straight up if you run that at scale on your own machine at home or whatever, you can do the electricity and the I/O. Stuff on your own machine, and see what that would be for a personal set of DIDs. And then obviously a larger gateway provider can just, maybe they're hosting in the cloud or they're, some infrastructure. You can see what it costs for per call for IO, right? A lot. If you're doing it on a cloud, they actually publish like, this is how much a million requests is, right? So you can do the math pretty easily. The other thing he was talking about, a retention proof, is effectively, if you're going to talk to a gateway, gateways that follow the DIDHT spec, basically just sort the cache list of DIDs that they're republishing based on the proof of work that you provide. So the more work you do, the longer your DID will be retained because it's going to be farther up the stack, right? It's not going to fall off the stack. And so that's, that's the work that you have to put in, and that's just CPU cycles. So that makes sense.
Yeah, another thing to add too, some organizations we've talked about using this as a basis for their applications, consider, the proof of work approach is kind of a fully decentralized approach where you put the work on the client that's requesting to register and keep, retained a DID that keeps getting published every couple hours. But the alternative also, if an organization has a reason to maintain these, is just simply to gate the registration process, right? So it can be even simpler than that. We're the only ones who can add to our set of nodes. We maintain the nodes. And then, ultimately, because resolution can come directly from any of the 15 million mainline nodes, they really only have to maintain a very small bit of infrastructure that just keeps that republishing going. Every client, regardless of which implementation they use, can always resolve. And so in some sense, the maintenance overhead can be as decentralized and open as you'd like, or as controlled if it's for a specific application that wants to ensure that the associated DIDs are being continually refreshed.
Yeah, and
got it.
The approach we have taken doesn't exclude paid models. Like certainly someone could, if you think it's a good business idea, set up a paid gateway and, pay $5 to retain your DID for a year or something like that. That's possible.
So I'm curious, what about the historical resolution? It's like, who's storing those histories? Is it gateway's responsibility to store that history?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So the assumption there is that you're talking to the same gateway. And if you're always using the same gateway, then they're going to become aware of all the different states of your DID. We have some ideas to improve that and communicate between gateways, but we haven't gotten to that quite yet.
Thanks.
Yeah, by default, the mainline DHT nodes basically just keep the most recent highest sequence number. So they're going to only keep the last one. I guess worth noting too, there's nothing that stops you from going offline and then coming back, 20 days later and publishing your DID again. It's not like the the state clearly won't be resolvable, but mainline DHT has built in, you know, this concept of being able to publish whatever the last known value is, and whoever holds the private key material can always republish. You probably want to keep them around all the time, but there may be application use cases where it's not necessary.
Well, yeah. I think
you're right. Yeah, I wonder if you could talk to the security and privacy considerations, and particularly the key compromise, like 8.4 of the spec. I guess like there's some limitations, right, of fixing to a single unrotatable group key.
Yeah, that's true. Similar to DID key and DID JWK, if you lose your root key, you're in trouble. That is an unavoidable constraint of this method. It relies on that.
So do you suppose that people using this method would like regularly rotate to new DIDs instead?
I don't think it has to be. It's a choice of what you want to use your DID for, right? Like people, it's kind of like saying, well, do people rotate Bitcoin addresses constantly? Probably not, right? They'd be shown that network has been around 15 years and people are holding keys with 12 words and, you know, that's working. So I think the one trade-off here is that to get a whole lot of scale and ease and just in, you know, ability to walk away from some really complex systems, there's that trade-off. And it is a trade-off. But at the time that, you know, ED25519 is broken, you know, the whole world's going to be using new TLS things, like switching over. And at that point, you might switch your DID over. But we're talking about catastrophic loss. And a lot of the other blockchain-based methods, they don't have – it's not like there's no way to lose it, because if there was no way to lose it, it's kind of this truism test in the world, right? If someone tells you there's no way that you can lose your DID, then it's not a decentralized method. There's lots of other things to put in, you know, stopgaps and like helpers, but there's always a way to lose your DID, right? Even with Ion, they had a recovery key, but that's a recovery key. If you lose that or the multi-sig behind it, yeah, you're done. So,
I mean, I think another thing operationally too is, especially for high security, high assurance scenarios, you know, likely that root key, the so-called identity key, is something you would not maintain in memory, you know, hot, right? And so because the DID method allows you to have additional verification methods, you would likely use those for things like credential issuance or other, you know, use cases where you're using the public cryptography and keep that identity key protected.
Sure, but do you kind of need it hot for republishing? Or I guess you're just republishing the old signature, the old signed content.
Yeah, do you only need it for an update or deactivate? Yep. And there's some work that we're exploring. This is still experimental at this stage, but, you know, ED keys do support the concept of threshold signatures. And so you could have, you know, a backup to the backup that is really a cold storage key that you only bring out in the event your identity key was, let's say, lost. And so there are mechanisms that could exist to do that, but still under research.
Yeah, one more thing to add is we probably could expand the section there on rotating to a new DID and how you signal that, which would help here as well for folks that do want to rotate.
Yeah, imagine you do that, deactivate the old one and you put pointers to a new DID, things like that, techniques to indicate that there's a redirect to a new DID. No, so, yeah. I mean, just similar to every other DID method, but same concept.
I have one more question, actually. So this root key is always included in the DID document. It's not like when I'm resolving, even if I push a payload that doesn't have it in there, well, I put it in. Okay.
That's correct.
Any other questions? By the way, this is just a curiosity question. I'm not very familiar with mainline, but what's the incentive for people to kind of host the nodes? I mean, earlier you mentioned there's 15 million nodes. What's the incentive? Because this is obviously most of us knows how distributed ledger work, right? What's the incentive behind these blockchain networks? But what's the incentive behind mainline?
Yeah, as Daniel put in chat, people really love to share files, whether it's for legal or not purposes. People share content all the time. And as long as BitTorrent is the best and most convenient way to do that, then the network will live on. And for the past 20 plus years, that's been true.
It's basically like this, like if I had to be crass about it, and usually I am, how long do you believe that porn and piracy are going to exist? And if you believe that that's going to be, you know, outside the realm of all our lifetimes, then you have pretty good layer of trust that mainline's going to be around. So there you go.
Love it. All right. Any other questions or comments?
I could ask another question. You talk about like data conflicts. So suppose like someone pushes the same, you have sequence number, right, to determine different sequences of DID updates. So suppose I push two DID updates of the same sequence with different DID documents. How do you manage resolution then?
Yeah, so that would be a state where you're conflicting with yourself intentionally. And nodes have a way to handle this. They could notice that you're doing it and say, we're not going to support you. Mm-hmm. Or they could sort your data lexicographically and choose a higher lexicographically sorted packet to be the true source. And that is in the spec as a conflict resolution step.
And yeah, going like all the way to the mainline level, nodes will not accept a new publish with the same sequence number. But you're, to Gabe's point, if you're doing this yourself, you can basically create this scenario, but only you can do that if you have the private key. So it's a bit of an odd attack.
Cool. All right. Any other questions from other folks? All right, so earlier Daniel said that it's kind of hard to tell whether people like this DID DHT or not. So if you like DID DHT or if you like today's presentation, you can just do a virtual applause in the middle in the middle of this button. There's a little hand icon, so you can do that in GT. And Nick, please. Oh, sorry. I think he misclicked. So anyway, so I just want to say thank you again to Gabe, Daniel, Frank, and the TBD team for jumping on board to actually answer questions and hosted this discussion around DID-DHT. Definitely very, very interesting. While it remains to be seen, this is the DID that ends all DIDs, but that said, it is definitely a very, very interesting new DID methods that I think most of us should consider.
Thank you all for having us. I just want to quickly say, please give us feedback. The DID method should be driven by the community. If you have ideas to make it better, we want to hear them. But thanks for having us, Harris.
Cool. Thank you. And Gabe, if you don't mind, can you send me the link to the DID-DHT spec, and then I can send it to the public list later so that people, if people want to contribute to the spec or have comments, they can do so.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Just put it in the chat.
All right, so last call for announcements, reminders, or work items. Great, so I think this concludes this week's W3C CCG meeting. So next week, we will have a modular open source identity platform coming next Tuesday. And the week after that, we'll have updates on social web community group. Things like Activity Pub and Fediverse. All right. Thank you. Thanks a lot. Have a good one. Bye.